Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
Talk 1110 WBT Friday morning.
Boy, that goes back many, many, many opens ago.
I know. Got to change it up every so often.
I'd forgotten all about that one.
John Hancock, Charlotte's most beloved, is back in the house on a Friday morning. Bo Thompson and Beth Troutman. It's Good Morning BT. And John, you know, you are not on the air every day anymore. It's one of the reasons why I like to have you back in on Fridays, at least because, you know, whatever the story may be, and sometimes the story is something positive and easy to talk about, and weeks like this, where we know what the obvious top story has been, and we've talked about it so much on this show and across the station and stations here at Radio 1, but I always find myself, when something like this happens, wondering what you would have said on a day like this, because you were on the air back in the days when we had similar stories. I mean, Columbine happened in 1999. You were just doing Charlotte radio then, and I'm just curious, what goes through your head when we have a headline like we do out of Texas this week?
Well, I said it when I walked in. This is one of the times when I don't miss being on the air at all. I'll bump into people around town that say, do you miss radio? And yes and no, and so on and so forth. But these obvious subject matter days are the hardest days to do. Because what do you say? 9/11, what do you say? Another school shooting, what do you say? And the thing that I really deplore about this is the show that we would have done the last few days was the same show that we've done 27 times before. Mm-hmm. And there are no answers. I think we all have our own answers, our own suspicions, or our... I watch people's reliance on faith. The numbers go down and down and down every year. It's the number of people who have a faith or have a strong connection to Christianity. And you don't have to go with my religion. I don't care. But have a belief in something. And then those numbers are receding at a fairly rapid rate. At the same time, I see havoc. And people without seemingly a conscience rising. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what faith does, but I think the one thing it kind of taught you was it developed a conscience in you. And so there was a right and there was a wrong and there was a feeling of guilt or a feeling, you know, I mean, and so I think that in some ways our lack of discipline in raising our kids or in other ways play into the whole story.
I was just thinking, as soon as I said you were on the air when Columbine happened, you were not here when Columbine happened, if I remember correctly, because that was 99. But you, of course, were on the air when Sandy Hook happened, and you were on the air when Parkland happened. So, unfortunately, and as I said earlier this week, there is precedent for what happened in Texas and other places, and I think that's part of what the refrain has been over the last several days about. You know, how do we respond differently this time? How do we break this cycle? Because unfortunately, and I even see the social media post that makes the rounds about here is the cycle that we go through as a society.
Yep,
you know, the shock, and then the thoughts and prayers, and then the investigation, and then eventually gets back around to people go back to normal life.
Right, it becomes inaction, and then back to the top of the cycle.
Sandy Hook happened the night of the bike drive, the day of the bike the Christmas bike drive.
And
there was a big controversy here in the building between the program director and myself as to whether or not we should do the bike drive that night. And he had decided, and I'm not shooting because we came to the right decision, but he had decided that we would call off the bike drive because I needed to be here in the studio. And my argument was, no, I've got kids here in this community that need taken care of for Christmas. And there are people that want to express their concern for the kids in this community and bring bikes and be a part of that ceremony. So we finally, it basically came down to, I don't care what you do, I'm going to be at South Mecklenburg High School collecting bikes tonight. You can do whatever the hell you want on the air. Mm-hmm. And so we did the broadcast from there. I remember that as being, and he later came to me and said that was the right decision. So that's why I'm not mentioning his name right now, because I don't want to push any guilt towards him, because actually he was right. Except in that circumstance.
Mm. Well, I think you raise a good point there, and it's what we're trying to do now. I think people, because the cycle has been done so many times, that people feel out of control. And to your point, I think all of us want some way to feel like we're offering some kind of love and support and kindness to people within our own communities, because we feel so helpless about the conversation on a national level, because it seems to not happen in an effective way. We stop listening to one another, or the conversations, people's buttons get pushed, or things like that, when the conversation needs to be about how we help and love each other, right?
Yeah, and like any tragedy, you've got to almost watch yourself about how far you think about it. Because when I think about all those kids in that classroom.
Yes, and the teachers.
And what they must have gone through, and who went first, and who, you know, I mean, you can drive yourself crazy with the facts.
And this newest story, Bo and I were talking about it earlier, the husband of the teacher.
Heart attack.
Yeah, who died, and his family has literally said he died of a broken heart. They were high school sweethearts. They had been married for more than two decades, and he broke.
Youngest is seventh grade. Their oldest is in the Marines or something like that. Uh-huh. So that gave me some solace in that there is somebody there. One of the children is old enough to kind of take control of the family part of it. Because I was immediately thinking, oh, my gosh.
Four children.
All young children, yeah.
Right.
But, that's... I don't know. Usually those stories are awe stories, you know, when somebody passes that closely to somebody else because of their devotion and love for each other. That's an awe story. This isn't one of those.
Mm-mm. Mm-mm.
It's a tough story to talk about all the way around. Excuse me. And sometimes the only thing we know to do is to, with this radio station, we said it the day after, Beth and I did, that the phone lines are open and we're all here and we can all talk through it together, because nobody has... Nobody has the right answer, so to speak. Nobody knows what to say.
And conversation's the only way to get to any kind of answer.
News Talk 1110 WBT Friday morning. Bo and Beth here, and Charlotte's most beloved John Hancock is in the house. And again, reminder, Monday, if you missed the 100th anniversary celebration back in April, the entire event is going to replay on WBT on Monday, and that features John Hancock and features three new Hall of Famers and features yours truly, and it features Beth Troutman. So a chance to hear just an unforgettable night, and we invite you to listen starting at 5 a.m., but all day long. So, you know, you can have it on whenever you're listening, doing your thing on Monday, and it'll be there. So
my part's early, so just set your alarm on a holiday weekend for 5:15.
Well, so here's the thing. 5 a.m. to noon is the first cycle, and then it will repeat noon to 7. So there's plenty of time to hear it throughout the day, and this will be the debut. I'm sure we'll play it again at some point down the line, but this is, you know, it's significant because we had the event and a lot of people came to it, but obviously not everybody who listens to the station could. And so this is the first time that the 100th anniversary event is going to play on WBT.
Such a great night.
I'm happy that so many of you are a part of it, and Hancock and Beth. And so a lot of things going on as we head into a Memorial Day weekend, but, you know, this is interesting because we trade texts, all three of us, about Friday morning and what's going on. And, you know, I always wonder what catches your attention, whether it catches mine without me talking to you. And this story called all three of our attentions about people who attend social events. 2/3 of people say they have avoided social events because they're embarrassed about financial information, which begs the question, Do most people go to social settings? And I mean, is this about something you verbally express, or is it by, you know, the clothes that you wear, or how does it even? I mean, it doesn't figure into my conversations when I go out places.
It almost sounds like social media pressure with a young person, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. It sounds like they surveyed a lot of young people who didn't feel like they could afford the appropriate no. outfit maybe for an event, and so they couldn't post pictures they wanted to post, or that maybe they couldn't afford the restaurant that everybody was going to. These are the things that went through my head.
It's one of the reasons I don't like Dallas, Texas, where all my family is originally from. To me, it's a status city. It's the emblem on your shirt. It's the kind of car you drive. It's the kind of house you live in. You're judged on all of that. And I just deplore that about Dallas. And I'm probably jumping to generalizations that I probably shouldn't, but that's just the way Dallas comes off to me.
I deplore it in general, like any situation that you're in where people are judging you, not based on the content of your character, but because you might have a certain pair of shoes or a certain guy. I wonder why
some people, I watched a lady walking around Belmont yesterday as I was walking my dog, and she had obviously a high dollar purse, and you know, because you can tell by the pattern and mm-hmm. so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. And I think to myself, why is that? First of all, why do you do that? And second of all, you're calling attention to yourself. You're saying, if you're going to rob anybody today, get me.
And I've always wondered, how does the market value get to be such a thing for certain items? You know, how do we get to a point where a certain pair of dirty tennis shoes are $550, you know, a pair? Yeah. Who sets the standard? Who sets the price for that? And why do people think, okay, this seems reasonable?
Yeah, that's a great question right there. Is because some of it is, you know, torn jeans.
Yeah, it's subjective. And
I'll tear my own, thank you.
Right, right.
Oh, I've never understood the whole, you know, paying top dollar. Like, you can go in a store and you pay more money for a pair of torn jeans. I guess it's torn the right way.
Right.
I mean, I don't know, but
well,
I mean,
but that varies greatly now too. I mean, now I see them to the point that they're torn to the degree that why are you wearing them in the first place?
Right. They don't even look like pants anymore. They've just become like a pair of pockets hanging out.
Screen pants.
But I guarantee you, you know, if you trace the money line back to the torn jeans would cost more than a pair of the untorn jeans.
Right, and probably some marketing person in some big office somewhere is like, well, it took us longer to make them because we had to age them in the sunshine on a porous rock.
The survey said that 58% feel alone and experiencing financial stress. I don't know of anybody, unless you've just got so much you don't know what to do with it. Elderly people worry about money,
right,
obviously, whether
incomes.
It's going to last. Younger people worry about whether or not they're going to have enough. If you look at the cost of a house today, there was a story that ran in one of the dailies, Axios or somebody, that talks about with the price of housing going up at the rate that it is right now, the amount of money that you have to, the median income has gone from like $50,000 to $70,000 for you to even think about buying a house.
Well, and the price of cars. I saw a commercial the other day for a Jeep. It was a Jeep, and it was like starting at $85,000. And I was like, what?
It's probably used, too.
Right, right, right. Because, you know, you can't, it was like a, I mean, I don't know, I'm saying Jeep as a brand, not necessarily Jeep as a brand, but an SUV, I should say. I'm one of those Southerners, like, I say Coke for all the sodas, I say Jeep for all the SUVs. But that in and of itself, do you have to pick now between being able to buy a car and buy a house because the prices are so expensive?
Yeah, I happen to drive a Honda CRV.
So in my mind, you drive a Jeep.
I'm in a class with about 53 million other people.
Well, we had a story a few weeks ago about houses that are on the market. And there's a house that was on the market in Charlotte that was relatively cheap. But then you found out it doesn't have a kitchen.
Yeah.
For $250,000.
But do you ever watch these shows on TV where the couple goes out and looks for a house and stuff, and they're a young couple, and they're, you know, their budget is like someplace between $800,000 and $1.5 million, and you say to yourself, huh?
Like, how do they have that budget? What do they do? Yeah. Well, to your point on that, with this same study that we were all talking about, people think that they need to earn a minimum of $86,000 to never feel stressed. But then in that same sentence, according to this same poll, earning an additional $1.3 million also leads to additional stress.
I think the more you make, the more stress that comes with it in some ways, because the more you make, the more you spend.
Well, yeah, and the more status maybe you feel like you have to maintain, like you have to buy the $550 pair of messy tennis shoes.
It goes back to that conversation that I've told both of you about at some point in time where I asked my dad, how old do you have to be, how much money do you have to make to get to a point where you can afford a child, having a child? And he said, if you wait for that moment, it's never going to come.
You have to
step out on the ledge and actually let things fall where they may, because there is no magic number. You're never going to feel comfortable. And I'll be honest with you, on the other end of it, as I'm about to send my first kid to college, you know, if I could go back and tell myself back then how much it was going to cost from birth to now, you'd never do it.
My dad built a house once, big one, huge house in Colorado, $50,000.
Wow.
And I remember in my mind, the ultimate house was $50,000.
Right.
You can't buy a tough shed now for...
Mm-hmm. No.
And then I remember asking my dad one time something about $1 million. Have you ever thought about making $1 million or something like that? And he said, yes, I have. I'm working on the second million. But he said, you know, the first goes pretty fast, kids and houses and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Big weekend presented by Watson Insurance.
There's some friends that I know living in this town, and I've come far to see them. Gonna track them down. They live in a brick house, painted white and brown. Left a tip for the maid, and I packed up my guitar, dropped my key on the counter. Gonna hook up with them later and go hit the bar. I need a big weekend. Kick up the dust. Yeah, big weekend. If you don't run, you rust. Well, I may shake your hand, but I won't know your name. The joke in your language don't come out the same. There's times when I'm down and there's nothing to blame. I need a big weekend. Kick up the dust.
Circle K Speed Street opens today, but it's up at Charlotte Motor Speedway. That'll go through Sunday. That's a difference this year from a location standpoint. ACC Baseball Tournament is going on at Truist Fields. They'll do the semifinals tomorrow, championship on Sunday. Knights are back, but not till Tuesday for a long homestand against the Memphis Redbirds. Halsey tonight at PNC at 7 o'clock. T-Pain is the Fillmore at 8 p.m. I have no idea who either one of them are. Whitewater Center has the all kinds of Memorial Day stuff going on. Uptown Farmers Market opens tomorrow at 8 o'clock. That's 300 South Davidson. And the 63rd Coca-Cola 600 at CMS on Sunday at 6 p.m. follows some race in Indianapolis. And take a little time to remember those who died for this country.
Cross every border with nothing to declare. You can look back, babe, but it's best not to stare. I need a big weekend. Kick up the dust.
There you go. Boom shakalaka. Y'all. Big weekend presented by Watson Insurance, protecting what's important since 1934.
You'd be front row at this show. Come on.
Halsey.
Halsey. PNC. I was thinking about this earlier, Beth. I didn't say this yet, but you know, we have this thing that we started doing with concert tickets. For example, Dave Matthews Band. We have this thing called Name That Dave, where we have people call in and name other Daves to win Dave Matthews tickets. We did it with Kenny Chesney.
Kenny Chesney, yeah.
It'd be kind of hard to do with Halsey. Or T-Pain.
Well, we could be Name That T. We could do
Tea.
T-Bone from WFNZ.
That's right.
Mr. T.
That's right.
Mr.
That'd
be
T.
a big concert, wouldn't it?
WBT. We had, and I had somebody text me this week, apparently Kid Rock is coming, or maybe he already came. I don't know, but he said you could do rocks and kids, and so that's how I know it's taken off a little bit, you know? And we have fun with it, you know? We get audio of various people named that thing, and then, but it's become its own thing, but I don't know. I saw Halsey.
There's no Name That Halsey. Name That Other Halsey. We might have like Hall's cough drops. Like that's the best I can do.
Yes, but
kids in the hall.
But do you know who Halsey is?
I know who she is.
Yeah,
and her songs are, or at least one of them is like dominating.
Yeah,
but not to the point that if I was standing next to her at a bus stop, which immediately brings up the question, what the hell is she doing at a bus stop? I'd necessarily know who she was.
So Halsey tonight, like you said, and I was thinking about this, the idea that Speed Street is not in Uptown Charlotte anymore. That may fake some people out this weekend.
Yeah,
it makes sense to me. I always wondered what the logic was between having all those people and all those campers up there at CMS Speedway, having to figure out a way to get to downtown Charlotte or Uptown Charlotte to get to Speed Street. So it makes all the sense in the world.
Have you been to the Coca-Cola 600? I mean, that may seem like a strange
but
question.
But it's been a while.
Yeah,
it's been a
for
long
me too.
While.
Beth?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I've been. I sold hot dogs at it once as a cheerleader to make money to go on a cheerleading camp trip.
At the 600?
Yeah.
And there you go.
I walked around with literally one of those things around my neck and like handed out hot dogs up and down the stairs.
I just asked somebody who grew up in Concord if she's ever been to the Coca-Cola 600.
Yeah, I sang the national anthem.
At the race?
The night before at the IROC race back in the day, like 97?
Wow.
97, yeah.
Is that nerve-wracking?
Oh, my God. It was the scariest thing I've ever done in my whole life.
Well, and we just sort of talked about this off the air. Like, you and I grew up around the same time. And so back when we were in high school in the 90s, that was when Whitney Houston's national anthem was all the rage.
And I just
still,
note,
it's
I don't,
still the standard.
Still the standard. And I will let you know, I sound nothing like Whitney Houston. I basically did it like spoken word.
Really?
No.
Is this on tape somewhere?
Probably not. Probably. 97. Maybe somebody had a camcorder maybe on their shoulders or something. But I had to write the lyrics on my hand because I was terrified I was going to forget.
What'd they call them? Super 8s?
Super 8s, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, it was right in the heyday of not only Whitney Houston's national anthem, but also The Bodyguard. Because I was telling you during a break,
yes.
I remember I had to judge in high school at Myers Park. We had a talent competition, and every other person was singing a song as Whitney Houston from The Bodyguard soundtrack. And every person did not sound like Whitney Houston. So.
No one does. You can't sing Whitney Houston songs. They just, because they're never going to compare.
I made the comment in the latter days of my employment here that I thought it was about time to just relax the national anthem because I was so tired of hearing bad versions of it that I just assumed not have to sit there
and listen to it.
And everybody thought it was the most un-American thing they'd ever heard. And I didn't necessarily mean it that way. And I understand why you were upset. But, boy, I get tired of some really bad versions of the...
Was it because...
Or using it more as a platform for your performance talent than
right.
it is a salute to the country.
Were you at the 1997 IROC race? Is that when you started getting a bad taste in your mouth for bad performances of
that
the national
been,
anthem?
That may have been around it. Some blonde chick that just...
just murdered it.
And the weird thing was is she was singing it and she had this box of hot dogs around her. That's what I couldn't quite figure out was...
And something about hot dog juice, right? No.
Right, something about the juice.
In case you haven't heard, 36 years later, Tom Cruise is back in movie theaters today, Top Gun Maverick.
Mm-hmm.
And you can hear Sean O'Connell's review of that movie at WBT.com. Go back and listen to the podcast this weekend. He talked about Stranger Things, which is back today. We talked about Obi-Wan Kenobi, which is a Disney Plus Star Wars series that debuts today. So no shortage of entertainment options this weekend. But talking about Tom Cruise, you know, maybe Top Gun Maverick was Tom Cruise's midlife crisis.
Yeah.
I don't know.
He wanted to get back into his glory days where he was playing volleyball in jeans on a beach.
I heard you guys talking about him earlier, the old pilot and helicopter and this, that, and the other. And I'm not gaga for Tom Cruise per se, but gosh, what a talented guy.
Yeah, he does his own stunts. I mean, this new Mission Impossible movie that's coming out, apparently he's doing his most complicated stunts, and he's pushing 60.
But is it because he sat back and said,
I haven't done enough yet,
or I need to somehow go back and, because, you know, he's revisiting a lot of these iconic roles that he...
his glory days.
I mean, I saw it printed somewhere this week that, you know, Tom Cruise is the last big-time mainstream American
movie star.
Like, you know, used to say about Harrison Ford or Marlon Brando. I mean, who would that be after Tom Cruise? I don't know, and I'm not saying he is or isn't, but I'm saying it was an interesting notion, and it feeds into this question about, you know, do you get to a point in your life where you you say to yourself, have I done all there is to do, or is it all downhill from here, or what?
It's the midlife crisis moment, right?
Right, right.
Have I been living the life I thought I was going to live? I get to halfway through my life. Did I do what I thought? Am I where I thought I was going to be?
I mean, I can tell you that early in my life, I mean, I have friends and colleagues that have gone into doing what I do, and then people that I didn't even know that, I mean, I look at somebody like Ryan Seacrest. Ryan Seacrest took over for Casey Kasem. He took over for Dick Clark, and also for Rick Dees, three iconic radio talents when he was in his 20s. Now, look, I started doing this show when I was 38. Mm-hmm. There were definitely parts on my way to 38 where I thought this was never going to happen. And, you know, I don't know what happens from here on out, but we all have different trajectories. But I do think that when you're in high school and when you're coming up, you sort of have this idea of when in your life you're supposed to sort of hit where you wanted to hit. And I played a clip from Jerry Klein last hour, the late Jerry Klein, who passed away 4 years ago. But I remember when he died, I found a clip from his old show here on WBT, and he did a show when he was 43 talking about, you know, have you reached a point, or has his your age group reached a point where many of them realized that they did not get to where they thought they would ultimately get? Mm-hmm. It's a complicated conversation because I personally think that it's all over the map. I mean, we have the two most recent presidents, the one in the White House now and the one that was before him, both were pushing 80.
Yeah, when they got in. And I think, too, the expectation you have for yourself and your life changes as you age, as your priorities change as well. Because I think what I thought I was going to be when I was in my 20s, because I had a huge quarter-life crisis. I was comparing myself to Citizen Kane writer Orson Welles, you know, thinking like by the time he was 25, he had starred in and produced and directed Citizen Kane. He wrote Citizen Kane, and I was thinking at 25, like, man, I've not done anything. I haven't gotten there, but I haven't had a midlife crisis, and I think it's because I just got perspective. You know,
I don't think I ever had a midlife crisis. I think I was too busy trying to get somewhere to have a midlife crisis.
Yeah.
Coming out of high school, I had already started in radio, but I was not living a dream. I remember I had a come to Jesus moment in a pizza place in Estes Park called Tony's, which is kind of still there. And it was snowing outside, and all my friends were off to college and so on and so forth. And here I was still, I dropped out of college already, was back home doing nothing, smoking pot every day, and I was staring out the window trying to figure out how I was going to get home that night, and kind of had a, so what are you going to do with the rest of your life, hotshot? And I kind of got serious with myself that night. And then the rest was trying to, it just kept on, I was, you know, a lot of my time was 3 years in the year out tour, either getting fired or quitting to go to a better position.
Right.
So I got here when I was 38, and except for the one little two-year blip, I was always pretty content here. I just my dream was to be a player in a bigger market,
and bigger than Charlotte, or just
no. I growing up, I would have had my eyes on Denver. And ironically enough, when I was growing up, Denver was the 23rd rated radio market in the country. And Charlotte is the 23rd rated radio market.
Go.
So I kind of achieved my dream. Now, looking back on it, I should have shot higher. And I've told graduation classes before and told some broadcasting schools, if I had to do it all over again, I'd go straight to New York or straight to L.A. Because you figure out a way to survive
when you're young,
wherever you happen to be.
Mm-hmm. That's so fascinating to me that you say that, because you and I have never had this conversation quite this way. You were 38 when you got here?
Yeah.
Because that's when I was 38 is when I started doing this show 10 years ago. But I never, people always ask me, did you always want to do mornings? And I said, that was never the goal. The goal was, when I was young, a kid in high school, watching all these luminaries around me, like you and others, Henry Bogan, and I said, I just want to be a player. I just want to be a player at that station. And player can mean a lot of different things. It doesn't necessarily mean, you know, morning show host, but it's what it turned into. But that was always sort of what was floating around for me.
You know what's interesting? 38 is mm-hmm. when I came back to this market. My goal was to have a national show, and I was actually doing that when I was 38. I had the show Right This Minute that we were shooting out west, and I came back to this market and gave up the national show because life hit me and my mom was diagnosed with cancer, and that shifted and changed everything, changed my whole perspective on what I even wanted life to be.
Well, what's the age that so many rock and rollers have died? It's 27, not 37.
Not 37.
Right?
We're 38 is the age for us, though, for life change.
Well, I think it's a good place to end here.
Yeah.
And here's the other thing. How do any of us know what the real midlife is anyway?
We don't.
You know? I mean, I know why they say a certain era of ages because of averages, but you never really know what midlife is.
No. Nope.
I'm pretty sure I'm not in it.
All right. On that note, thank you to John. Thank you to Beth and John Moore and Bernie and everybody else. Have a great weekend.